Chapter 83. Garris had never fought in a full-scale battle before, but she had watched several with Gavin's general Running Wolf. In another age, he would have been revered as a great leader. Instead, he'd faced Corvin Danavis and been thrice bested by smaller forces commanded by the mustachioed genius. Regardless, he'd been a kindly older gentleman with a soft spot for Garris, and he would explain to her what he was seeing as the distant lines clashed. Of course, he was often too busy to tell her much, but at other times it seemed to help him to think out loud. So now, as Garris galloped down the hill and headed toward the fray, she was able to piece together more than she would have otherwise. The buildings propped against both sides of the wall, the feature that would eventually doom it, Garris was sure, were actually helping in the short term. They were like a talus slope, wide enough that it encumbered anyone bringing forward siege ladders and too unpredictable to charge men straight up at any one place. Eventually, King Haradul's men would figure out which places were stable and how much weight they could support, but until then the collapsing buildings killed and slowed the men attacking the wall. As Garris rode in, drafters appeared at the top of the wall en masse for the first time. The wall wasn't high, but it was wide enough for the defenders to move along the top at great speed, and they'd seen King Haradul's cavalry coming here. Reds and sub-reds worked in teams from the top of the walls, one flinging sticky pyre jelly down onto the attackers, and the other setting it alight. King Haradul had a line of his own drafters up front, blues and greens, attempting to divert the pyre jelly in midair and throw it back at the wall. Reds threw their own Luxin up at the defenders on the wall, though Haradul's teams weren't as good at getting it alight every time. On both sides, musketeers did their best to pick off drafters. The defenders were getting the best of it, but there were simply so many attackers, Garris didn't see how they could possibly hold out for long. And why had King Haradul brought his cavalry here now? Directly against the wall, their maneuverability was negated, and they made easy targets for the blue drafters at the top of the wall, who would pop out from behind the crenellations, fire off a few daggers of blue, and then duck back down. All Garris had to do was muscle her way through the crowd, not hard when you were mounted, steal a musket, stay alive long enough to get close to King Haradul, and blow his head off. In the heat and fury and blood and confusion and cacophony of battle, it was quite possible no one would even realize the killing shot had come from behind him. Garris heard a yell behind her, somehow different from the rest of the screams. She turned her head, still leaning low over her galloping horse, a dozen mirror men coming after her on their gigantic chargers. Her heart convulsed. So the subtle approach isn't going to work. She picked at the eye caps again. The skin at the corner of her eye was tearing, but she wasn't any closer to pulling the damn things off. If she could draft, she would have a chance. She pushed down the sudden flood of red fury with effort. 80 paces out, she saw a line of musketeers reloading. She scanned the crowd for anyone bearing a flintlock. A matchlock wouldn't work for this. Then, slowing her horse to get the timing right, she swept in just as one of the officers finished reloading and hefted the musket up to his shoulder. She snatched it right out of his hands. Commander Ironfist had often chided her for her trick riding, for practicing things they both knew had no use beyond impressing the Blackguard's new recruits. A vision of the big man's head shaking in amused surrender went through her head as she jammed the musket into the saddle sleeve. She was wearing this damn dress that left her half naked and half totally restricted. She wasn't really going to... Garris kicked her feet free of the stirrups, turned her wrist behind her back to get a firm grip on the cantle, tucked the reins between horse and pommel, and dismounted as the horse continued at a canter. She hit the ground and instantly leapt, twisting, feeling the sleeves of her dress rip. She'd always practiced this with a better cantle, but she'd also practiced on taller horses, and she almost flung herself over the side of the saddle on her way back up. It took her half a moment, but she settled into the saddle, backward. She drew the musket, leveled it, trying to absorb as much of the shock of the horse's cantering in her knees as she could, trying to time how long it would take between trigger pull and musket fire. She aimed at the lead mirror man 40 paces behind her and pulled the trigger. She'd aimed perfectly, timed everything right, but the musket didn't fire. She cocked the flintlock again, checked the mechanism. No flint. It had fallen out, probably during her impressive trick riding. Bollocks. Caris threw the musket away, reversed her hands, turned her head over her shoulder to make sure she'd be leaping off flat ground, and dismounted. The reverse dismount and remount was actually much harder than the original trick, but she did it perfectly, both feet hitting the ground, pushing off in tandem just as the pull of the horse's forward motion catapulted her into the air. Except as she was pulled up and forward, half of her horse's head was torn off by a musket ball and its body dove for the earth. If she'd still been holding the reins, she'd have been flung to earth too. Instead, she became a human cannonball. The force of her jump and the horse's sudden dive had her twisting like a cat. She was flying, upside down, and backward. Time only for one thought. Roll when you hit. But when she hit, there was no time for anything at all. Whatever it was, there were multiple levels, and it was mercifully soft, which didn't stop it from whipping her head and limbs in different directions. When she finally hit ground, she couldn't move for a few long seconds. Someone was cursing. She saw feet. She was lying on top of a man, and he was struggling to get out from under her. She must have crashed into the backs of half a dozen soldiers and taken them all out with her. One man had his leg twisted at a nasty angle. Another turned to look at her, his nose fountaining blood, cursing. A huge explosion took away whatever he was saying, perhaps 60 paces away. Everything seemed to freeze for a moment on the battlefield. Then things began moving too fast to take them all in at once. Caris jumped to her feet and almost collapsed. She was so light-headed that it took all of her concentration not to fall. She checked herself quickly. There were stinging abrasions on her arms and legs, dress in pathetic shape, but no serious wounds. She touched her eyes. The eye caps were unbroken, of course, and smudged with blood so they were harder to see through. Just perfect. Now that she was in the midst of the battle, the world narrowed. There were images like little paintings, but no hole. Caris saw a drafter up on the mother's gate. Isom Blue? What was he doing here? He stood, skin fully blue, both arms extended, shooting blue daggers in rapid succession. An absolutely stunning display to work so fast, keeping his will focused, shooting from both hands. He was like a dozen musketeers. 3 dozen, despite the hazy quality of the morning's misty sunlight. Everywhere he turned, men went down. He turned toward the mirror men, and Caris saw those blue blades shearing off in every direction from the mirror armor, chewing through everyone around the mirror men, but sometimes catching a chink or hitting the mirror armor flat enough that a knife punched through. A body stood in front of Caris, headless, its neck spraying blood in time with the last beats of its heart. The sound of muskets firing and the roar of blood in her ears melded together, a pulse, life and death twined together. The mirror men surged toward a hole in the wall, perhaps 7 paces across, so that was where the explosion had been. A red drafter, one of King Haradul's free, had gone mad. He was cackling, throwing pyre jelly on everyone around him. The men splattered with the stuff were shouting in fear. Someone was begging him to stop. A man was falling off the shattered edge of the wall, slipping, screaming. Off to one side, atop the wall, the sun gleamed off a man's copper hair. Caris's eyes locked on him. Gavin. He leaned close to another man, issued an order, Corvin Danavis. So the man really was a general. And he was here? Gavin clapped the man on the shoulder, and they parted. Caris turned, remembering the pursuing mirror men, perhaps too late. The leader was 20 paces back, horse surging through the lines, shouting at men to move aside, sword drawn. He was alone, his men cut off behind him by a sudden sideways surge in the line, but he was too close. Caris was unarmed and still wobbly on her feet. 10 paces away, her pursuer seemed to jump in his saddle. Caris could see the whole front of his body, so he hadn't been shot from the wall, but nonetheless, he tumbled out of his saddle. Someone had killed the man from behind. What the hell? Caris looked behind the man. Kip. Kip? The young man was riding at a full gallop behind the mirror men, following the path they'd pushed open through the ranks of soldiers, but he didn't have a musket. Instead, he was carrying a big green ball, larger than his own head. His skin was green and he had a wild look in his eyes, and he looked like he was going to tumble out of the saddle at any moment. Not seeming to care that he was guiding his horse directly into other horses, Kip drew the green globe backward like he was throwing a ball. Classic Tyro misperception. They always thought that because a ball had mass, you had to muscle it. Kip's arm came forward, and then with an audible pop, he shot the green globe out at the mirror men. It caught one in the side of his mirrored helmet. The mirror armor sheared Luxin easily, but it still had to deal with the momentum of what was hitting it. A breastplate might withstand a bullet, but the man inside was still going to have some broken ribs. Here the man's head snapped to the side, blasting him out of the saddle, and the green globe ricocheted off, hitting another mirrorman's shoulder and not quite dismounting him, then caromed into a third mirrorman's horse, catching the animal on the side of its head and knocking it off its feet. The force of the shot blew Kip out of his own saddle, almost halting all of his forward motion. His horse shied, trying not to collide with the others at the last second, but they had been startled by riders falling and a giant green ball flying past their heads, and one dodged directly into its new path. Animal collided with animal at great speed, crunching a mirrorman's leg that was trapped between them. Both horses went down, but Caris was more concerned about Kip. She lost sight of him when he fell. Soldiers were still a river, pressing past the mirrormen, not knowing or caring much what this fight was about. They just wanted to get out of the shadow of these deadly walls and into the city. Caris snatched a sword off the ground and ducked through the crowd. Three riders had wheeled around and were pushing toward a spot farther back. She couldn't get there in time. One was drawing his musket from the saddle sheath to kill her when his head exploded in a burst of yellow light and pink mist. Caris was sure this time the shot hadn't come from the wall. It had to have come from the opposite direction. From the hill? And what the hell could have done that? An explosive musket ball? She was still too far away. She saw two mirrormen pulling muskets out, aiming down. Twin green spears, pillars almost, they were so thick, erupted from the ground where the riders were pointing and impaled them. The first one was hit square in the chest, green light fractured out in a spray as the mirrored breastplate held for a moment, and then burst. And still the green spear shot up, lifting the mirrorman up into the air. The other man was no more lucky. That spear hit the top of his breastplate, again shearing some Luxin away into a flash of green light. Then the spear rode up, catching him under the chin and going into his head, ripping his helmet off his ruined head like a child popping the head off a dandelion. Each was lifted several paces into the air before the green Luxin spears cracked and dropped them to the ground and dissolved to nothing. Kip jumped to his feet, looking a lot less dead than he deserved. Caris arrived a moment later. He gave her a curious look, and she said, "Kip, it's me. Do you recognize me? It's Caris." Despite that astounding display of power, Kip was a new drafter, and the mental and emotional effects of the colors were always greatest when you first started. The wildness of green could make a drafter dangerous. He lifted a hand quickly, and she flinched. "Kip, it's me, Caris," she said, all too aware that there was still a battle going on, though the amount of musket fire from the top of the wall had dwindled to almost nothing. "Hold still," he said, staring intently at her face. He brought up a single finger and moved it as if to poke her in the eye. She could feel the heat radiating from it. What? Kip was a sub-red, too? There was a hiss as he touched the eye cap, and he must have hit the fuse point, because the eye cap dissolved. Then he did the other. And like that, Caris could draft again. Oh, hell yes. "What do you say?" Kip asked. What was he talking about? "Thank you," Caris asked. "I say we go kill us a king," Kip said, grinning recklessly. When they were in the grip of their color, greens didn't tend to be real big on common sense. Caris looked and saw that Ras Kharadul was just getting to the gap they'd blown in the wall. Half of his men were already through. It was the perfect time to attack. Well, other than the fact that Caris and Kip were on the side of the wall with King Kharadul's entire army. Drafting some red off the pools of gore around them, Caris felt the comforting wash of red rage. She felt strong. "Let's go kill us a king," she said.